Oh, hey. Remember how I used to write short video essays about jump starts every 2 weeks? Yeah, just take every single new manga from the Shonen Jump magazine, squeeze them into your schedule. Uh-oh, one is already ending? Well, perfect timing, gonna write one about Neolation quickly. Doesn't matter that it's already ended. Hell Warden Higuma ended 4 months ago. Well, it doesn't matter, gotta squeeze one in there. Already got a script and a cameo for it. Surely that's a sustainable content output model for a growing YouTube channel, right? Right, well, it doesn't matter now, because there's a more clickbaity format that will also allow me to satisfy my completionism. Are top 10 lists even good clickbait now? I don't know. You make the call. So, 2020 has been a year of tragedies, to say the least. Haikyuu and Demon Slayer got the finales, We Never Learn got 5 different endings, one of which glorified grooming, and Actage was cancelled on the grounds of its writer being a sex offender. And no other tragedies happened this year. When so many mainstays leave the magazine, new candidates must take the place. And so they did. Some were great, some were shite. Let's rank all the shite ones today. Is what I would say if I preferred cheap clicks over new ones, but all these are kind of a mixed bag, really. They have their advantages and disadvantages, and I wanted to talk about them both, but they're just arbitrarily ranked by how much I enjoy them. So...
Hey, Wednesdaydale. You know, you really probably shouldn't leave the door to the Manga Mosaic Studio open like that. You'd have some dodgy people walking in.
Oh, okay, so apparently Hovind's going to talk about the jump starts as well. Oh, right, sure, that works fine.
Sure. I read pretty much all of them and have something to say about everything, besides A Gravity Boys, which I've literally no comment on, really.
So, with that caveat, let's look at the top 9 worst jumpstart manga of 2020. Why 9? Because... there were 18 jumpstarts this year, so if you want an even split between this month's video and next month's video, which is going to be about the good ones, it'd have to be 9 for this list and 9 for the other. Yeah. Anyway... Number 9.
Burn the Witch. I must say, in the time since Wednesdaydale and I's last podcast, I was not expecting to have become one of those Bleach is good after Soul Society, actually, hipsters, but here we are, I suppose. That said, this was sort of a dud for me. I am hesitant to judge it too harshly, recalling how bad faith and week-to-week fatigue turned the discourse surrounding Kubo's previous work so unfairly sour. There's certainly enjoyment to be had with his gloriously silly attempts at anglicized names, but I think I enjoyed the sparse nature of the material and the quirky batshit tendencies of latter years Bleach more as an evolution of that manga's earlier style than I do as a jumping on point for something fresh. This limited run also ended weirdly abruptly with how it resolved its climax, but I won't go into specifics in case people haven't read it yet. I'm glad Kumo's found a format where he can make his work at a rate he's happy with, and it seems to have paid off sales-wise. I'm intrigued to see more, even if I'm less than won over so far. If there's one thing my Bleach reread has taught me is that he often plays the long game with his storytelling, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I, on the other hand, haven't reread Bleach in a while. While I think there's some merit in being skeptical of shonen discourse around Bleach, I'm still not a fan of the way Kubo writes dialogue, and I don't think this much improved in Burn the Witch.
Aren't fairy tales just full of it? Girls get hit by a magic spell, turns into a princess, everyone says they want to be the princess, are they for real? None of you have any idea why the spell actually wears off. If idiots are the only ones that get bewitched, I'd rather be the one casting the spell.
Demons move faster than you can run, Sadie.
Hashtag too deep for you indeed. We get it, you're not like the other girls, yeah? Kubo has a special knack for writing long speeches that 12-year-old me would have found so cool, but the current me tends to find pretentious purple prose. It unfortunately seeps into the banter as well. You're doing it for the money, I'm doing it for the achievements, and if anybody asks, we're doing it for the social justice. Who are you saying this tagline to, Ninny? Noel already knows this. What is your point, Ninny? I was disappointed by some of the translation choices as well. Compared to the one-shot, Season 1 shied away from British vocab, and I can't help but think it could be the Tuesday Innit part of the fandom that considers British accents inherently silly, even passively so. So I kind of fear the localization team aggressively Americanizing everything, like in shows like Little Witch Academia, Seven Deadly Sins, or Ancient Magus' Bride. I don't know, I seem to be the only one who has weird hang-ups about it, so maybe I should stop white knighting. So far, Burn the Witch hasn't quite managed to bewitch me yet, with its hit and miss characters and jam-packed story structure leading into an anticlimactic fight. It's good that Kubo has managed to find himself workflow that doesn't result in him being overworked, but it's equally hard to ignore that his format makes the world-building quite overwhelming. Especially since in Bleach we learned about the world through an outsider to it, whereas here that is not the case. I'll keep reading Season 2 when it comes out, but so far, consider me unimpressed. Number 8.
Sakamoto Days.
Content warning for suicide for this one. 2 years ago, I never would have expected Spy Family comedies would become an oversaturated market, but here we are. Honestly, I blame Robert Rodriguez. You put Steve Buscemi in the least Steve Buscemi role possible and this is what happens. Yes, the direct result of Spy Kids 2 was Spy X Family, Mission Yosakura Family, and Sakamoto Days. Change my mind! So here's how the story goes. We find out Taro Sakamoto was a hitman, there's no doubt. But then he got married, had a kid, stopped killing, and got out of shape. He now works as a small-time store owner and the neighborhood handyman, and only sometimes fantasizes about brutally murdering rude customers. That last part is actually quite a creative running gag that does get me every time, but just the shock value of the chonky lad performing impressive acrobatic feats just isn't funny to me. At least, Jump has managed to get equal opportunity body shaming with both this and me and Roboco, so good for them, I guess? This ordinary store owner just barely emotionally repressing his violent urge is still quite amusing, though.
Chuckled at a couple of the jokes, but not really sold. Occupies a very similar space premise-wise to Spy Family, and humor-wise to Mashal, and both of those do their things well enough already.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to help the comedy that Sakamoto is just MASH from Mashal, but without the deadpan awkwardness. I thought him being basically Garfield and mostly communicating through his thoughts would get a laugh out of me, but there isn't much wit to his lines, really. None of the other characters are that interesting either. The telepath hitman shop assistant Takamoto takes under his wing is as interesting as a waffle. Mrs. Sakamoto is slightly more fun with her reacting to danger with a smile since she knows her hubby will rescue her anyway, but it is a bit yikes how her emotionally blackmailing him to stop killing by throwing herself off a cliff is framed as the most romantic moment between them so far. Sakamoto Days might have not had a lot of chapters to prove itself quite yet, but from what I've seen, it's very hit and miss. Number 7.
Zipman.
A mediocre manga with a possible story and confusingly written villain motivations. The main character is a cop. I've recorded a whole podcast about it with Grail9 back in the day, so I won't get into it too much, but suffice it to say, a story about an authority figure putting down a bunch of antagonists framed as rebels without a cause, with going back to the status quo as a goal, wasn't particularly to my liking this year. So yeah, podcast plug. Go listen, maybe? Yeah, do it.
Three Chapter Club. Man, if only this series lived up to its breathtaking colour page. Not awful, but just thoroughly middling, with a main character I found neither likeable nor interesting.
Number 6.
Mori King.
A young boy named Chota is raising a larva of a rhinoceros beetle, and it emerges from its cocoon as a hot teenage boy who still does everything a rhinoceros beetle would do. He aims to battle other anthropomorphized bugs to become the king of the forest. The selling point of the manga is the ridiculous of its premise, and unfortunately, other than that, it doesn't seem to do enough to stand out from the crowd. I will say the humour seems to be the strongest when the manga focuses on Mori King actually acting like a beetle, such as in the film set chapter, and the weakest when it actually tries to be heartwarming, as it exposes the fact that the cast is very bland. Between that and the manga displaying cops shooting at an unarmed civilian the moment the Black Lives Matter protest started, I'm surprised this series has reached over 30 chapters. Jeez, it's the second series in a row where I have a problem with cops. Well, hopefully it's the last one, otherwise my rant would become insufferable. No, I am not foreshadowing anything. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was fine, I guess. I don't know. I feel like I've seen the setup of a straight man character gawking at how weird the absurd premise of the manga is done, like, a million times, and a lot better elsewhere. That said, I guess it's nice that Shyappa from Hunter x Hunter finally got his own series. Good for him.
So, yeah. Honestly, it wouldn't bug me if the series got cut, because it's definitely not going to earn this year's Jumpstart crown. Number 5.
Our Blood Oath. Bleh. Three chapter club. Similarly generic Exorcist premise to Phantom Seer, but with none of the style to carry it. Second chapter also felt really pointless and didn't even build or develop on anything plot or character-wise. Definitely worth a skip.
Well, this is just thoroughly uninteresting, isn't it? Okay. So, there's these two brothers, right? One is a human adopted by a couple of vampires, the other the biological kid of that couple, a descendant of vampire royalty. One feeds the other blood so the latter can fight, and together they fight other vampires, I guess? Forge a path between humans and vampires so they can coexist? I'm not sure what they're here to do exactly, except just to faff about. I feel like with these characters, if you've got something interesting stuff going for them in their extended backstory, you should start with that rather than with them helping another lad from an adoptive family, followed by the vampire kid taking care of an even brattier kid. Seriously, that felt like it belonged in, like, a filler chapter 25 or something. What the hell was up with putting this in chapter 2? So yeah, otherwise you're treating this manga as character-centric rather than story-centric, and I'm sorry, but these characters are just too bland to pull this off. This title has a habit of leaving its most interesting plot points out of the main story and then just telling them in two-panel narrations, rather than whole flashbacks. Like the short story about the vampire girl who almost sucked her friend's blood at school and has since been afraid to meet her human friends. Really, why would you choose to not show it all in full? What else? There's an interesting choice I can talk about. Okay, so in chapter 9, there is actually a bit of an extended flashback telling the story of a peasant vampire family in Eastern Europe that got outed by a family friend and so had to slaughter that village. So the friend's name in question was Marek, which is an actual Polish name, so that's nice, and also it's a nice touch that this takes place in Eastern Europe, as before being popularized by Bram Stoker as the modern selves, vampires originated in Slavic mythology. So what else do they say?
There was no word for vampire in the world in those days.
Yeah, fucking walls!
Yeah, the etymology of the word in question is not certain, but there are two words in modern Polish, vampir and upiór, that might have originated from the dead Proslavic language word, and there is historical precedent in some geographical names that might point to that, such as Wąpiersk, Wupar or Upire. So yeah, a point made? I don't know. I might turn around on this one. I've done so on Mitama Security. Remember how negative my review of that manga was? I could see this one improving if it focuses more on the story, and I do see some inkling of potential in it, but for now, I feel like a bloody oaf for reading it the whole way through. Number 4.
Bone Collection. What the hell was this? This is the kind of failed jumpstart I don't usually follow to the end, but somehow here I am. I don't have much more to add, just... Wow, none of this was any good, was it?
So, Bone Collection, published on April 26, 2020, written and drawn by Jun Kirazaka, translated by Jun Kagoda, and lettered by Evan Waldinger, is another Exorcist manga, I guess kind of filling the shoes of Yuna of the Haunted Hot Springs. It tells the story of Kazami Jinai, an exorcist and a high school boy who likes boobs and wants to become a famous exorcist so that he gets more boobs. But he's also, he's a wimp, right, and he's been born into an exorcist family, so he's an exorcist, I guess, yeah. And he has a third wheel childhood friend who's also a talented exorcist. Well, he's not that talented, but he knows a forbidden spell that would allow him to kick ass, but it's forbidden. But then, one day, a girl drops from the yokai gate, from the star, and she's a wacky princess who tells him to buy her pancakes. She eats a lot, you see. How quirky, never seen that before. And she has giant knockers, the dialogue won't let us forget that. And oh, Kazami stares at her tits, so that must mean that he sees her as a person. She's a yokai, you see. Oh no, but then another yokai arrives and he's rapey. So then Kazami grabs Pyrus tit to borrow her powers and defeats him. This has become Guilty Crown. I'm losing my mind. So everything that makes me call no, never mind about that. But Pyrus, apparently the strongest yokai of them all, and everyone challenges her to battles, but she just wants to become an ordinary girl, so she won't fight, and will just get Kazami to use up all of her powers, so she can turn herself into a human. Didn't we just have this with Guardian of the Witch and Yui Kamiyo? Are we starting a trend of depowering leading ladies of the given Jump series as the main girl? Because, you know, once is fine, and certainly an interesting approach, but if it keeps happening, I'm going to find it kind of suspicious that in a magazine aimed at boys edited by a boys club, we have an array of female characters going all, "Wow, MC-kun, you treat me like a person instead of garbage. That's enough for me to instantly fall in love with you and give up all my powers so I can live my life as a normal girl." This can possibly have metaphorical meaning. Oh, hi, Japanese medical colleges rigging the results of their entry exam so they accept fewer female applicants so that more women in Japan become housewives and thus counter the declining birth rate. How did you come into this summary? Oh, and by the way, Kazami has a snooty brother who wears a school swimsuit under his uniform. Ah, what a clown. Heavens forbid a teenager experimented with a gender expression. Oh, I'm sure that this joke won't ever age one bit. Hey, by the way, did you know that in my country, queer people have been compared by the ruling party politicians to a plague? There's a fascist president who wants to make gender reassignment illegal, and a large part of the population wants the gays dead. Fuck this manga! But yeah, it kind of entertained me, so it's my number 4. So yeah, from what we heard from Time Paradox Ghostwriter, Shonen Jump has an incredibly high serialization hurdle. They won't accept your work if your characters are bland and the story overplayed. But then we have Bone Collection! Why does this need to exist? It doesn't entertain, it's not moving, it's not thought-provoking, it's not even a good example of its genre. I don't know. If some of my mutuals want to argue that this is another example of Shonen distilled, then I'm fully prepared to say that I probably don't like Shonen. I'm a fake fan. Yeah, that was true from the start. I don't think this series can even aspire to be Boner Collection, since its art is massively unappealing. The anatomy is horribly distorted without any significance behind it. This works better in Chainsaw Man, where it shows the bleakness and the naturalism of it all. And I feel like Bone Collection is trying to reach the same absurdity, but it's still trying to be a more traditional action comedy series, which is kind of why it doesn't suit this manga. And I feel like Bone Collection is still trying to be, there is nothing to it, it's still trying to be visually appealing and even titillating, it just fails at it. There is this absurdist farcical tone that the series is trying to strike around the middle of its run. It's another feature it shares with Chainsaw Man, which I like, but emphasis on trying? Perhaps this series already wasn't my cup of tea, but its comedy always takes a step too far in explaining everything and making the punchline too obvious. You can't really do absurdism while being predictable. It's no wonder the series has only been cancelled after 15 chapters, resolving the final arc built up as semi-series in an anticlimactic bone wedding scene where the QB is defeated by people having a good time at the reception. It's about the most bone collection could have done, and in concept it seems like a good idea. Every time this series comes up with a grotesque idea, it falls apart in execution, though. Whatever it does, Chainsaw Man does better, and what's left without it? Are cookie cutter shonen perpetuating and encouraging some pretty harmful gender stereotypes? And an awkward racist metaphor with unfortunate implications. You see, only some yokai are bad. We don't need to re-examine the holistic ramifications of the system we created to subjugate these creatures. It's fine. Everything is fine. The Four Kings are fine. We should definitely keep these structures in place. The people who sentenced the innocent Kawanoshin don't need to be brought to justice, right? We still need the systemic prejudice for all these bad eggs out there. It's fine, you know. Everything is just... fine.
Number 3.
High School Family, Kokusei Kazuku.
High School Family, High School Family, High School Family. Just kidding, this manga is ungodly boring. I swear it, if Jump comes out with one more slice of life gag manga, somebody bloody shoot me in the face. I've heard about this manga's reputation through the grapevine, but I didn't think it wouldn't make me chuckle even once. So, the premise of this one is, we have an average high school student whose parents, little sister, and even his cat Gomez enter the same high school as him. The parents had only finished middle school and the little sister is a genius. So, the son tries his very best to avoid them, but through a series of very down-to-earth hijinks, they end up socializing with his class better than he does. This is just nothing. I feel nothing. The punchline to everything is just, uh-oh, it's so weird that he's going to high school with his family. And I feel like that's the exact issue. You can't use your premise as your punchline. This is why all your chapters end so awkwardly.
I have nothing more to say. Let's end this awkwardly. Number 2. Build King. Content warning. I discuss rape and pedophilia in this one. So, preemptive apologies for the... limited visuals in the video edition of this podcast. But I specifically don't want this section to invite anyone to read Build King on account of the author being a convicted sex offender, with record of child prostitution around the time of his first series being published. I might as well get this out of the way first. So that happened in 2002 on 5 different occasions. Mitsuhoji Shimabukuro got a 2-year sentence with 4-year suspension and then was rehired by Shueisha and continued to be a successful author. This set a bit of a precedent for Shueisha, rehiring child molesters and pedophiles. It happened with Watsuki, and in 2 years' time it's going to happen with Matsuki, writer of Act 8 as well. I was a different person half a decade ago when I did read Toriko, but now I can't with a clear conscience read any more of Build King, knowing I'd be rewarding that precedent with my clicks and my subscription revenue. I can't make that call for anyone else, but I'm not going to continue reading it. The original one-shot from 2018 was fine, I guess. It had much more of a focus on visual spectacle than the current series, relying on the pure coolness of houses transforming into mechas and fighting each other. That and a lot of scatological humour from run-of-the-mill characters. It leaned heavily on the theme of a home being a safe haven, which is pretty ironic given the high estimated statistics of unreported domestic abuse and rape in Japan, but whatever. The first chapter of the series is built on similar themes, but with heavier emphasis on the motivations of the two leads and the scope of the world building. I can see how you could like it. But I don't think I can get over Shimabukuro having that effect on the manga industry. At least not until Shueisha stops being a boys' club that bails each other out for awful atrocities until it's not profitable to do so. I'm not gonna judge anyone for reading Build King, but I am mildly discouraging you from doing so.
And the number one shy jumpstart of 2020 is...
Hardboiled Cop and Dolphin.
Content warning for... discussion of police brutality and sexual assaults.
3-chapter club. Wow, they couldn't have timed this first chapter any worse, could they? I gotta say, it was quite something to watch my Twitter feed become a sea of yikes as the big payoff of the new Jump debut involved cops discharging their firearms at unarmed civilians as a show of intimidation, right as the situation between the protesters and the police in the US was at its peak. Yeah. Which is unfortunate, because when it didn't stray into this sort of territory, these opening chapters were somewhat amusing to me. The self-aware inner monologue of the main character definitely had me cracking a few smiles, and the manga thankfully seemed to steer more into the realm of bizarre, sea creature-related crime. That said, I'll probably pass on picking it back up again, since this manga seems to be, well, floundering a little. I'll sit myself out.
Just from the positioning on this list, I think you can imagine my feelings on this one are just a bit more negative. Just a tiny bit. I wasn't thinking it was going to get that spot when I was going into this, but after a while it became clear to me that it couldn't be anything else. On its own, Hard-Boiled Cop and Dolphin, or as I like to call it, Dirty Harry Moves to Innsmouth, is a relatively boring story with a unique premise. A police officer who doesn't play by the rules, is fired from his big city job and has to move to a seaside village where he partners up with another cop, who turns out to be a dolphin, in a very understated reveal, and who is also pretty boring and has basically the same personality as the main guy. I haven't read Tamura's most famous work, Beelzebub, but I have read their other Jumpstart, Hungry Marie, which also had a decent premise going for it, but failed to impress in execution. Here, the characters are similarly unengaging. The mystery is so non-existent that half the time I forget this is even supposed to be a cop series. And, alright, let's do this thing. So, I can't blame you for thinking that this story was just ill-timed and unfortunate, but I can't come to the same conclusion. I don't think that this manga coming out a month later would be more well-timed, nor 2 months later, nor a year later, nor a year earlier, nor now, because police brutality is a universal and perpetual phenomenon that we've always talked about and still are. And we should be able to recognise the glorification of police brutality as a thing, regardless of if something is happening in the US at the given moment. We've done this argument way back when, like when, for example, Yo was given a firearm in Dr. Stone. We should also be able to do so for example, policing in Hiroaka. The main counter-argument to this reading goes as follows. The police in Japan are known to be not so quick to use firearms or lethal force on unarmed civilians as the US equivalents, implying that criticism against the glorification of police brutality or other propaganda doesn't hold water because of that. Let me reply to that threefold. Firstly, well, why doesn't it? This implication doesn't necessarily follow the comparison, because as said before, unjust state violence is a universal problem, not a local one. The degree to which it happens doesn't matter. And it's not limited to Japan and the US either. Last year in Poland, a series of protests from queer activists has resulted in some of those activists being locked up and, in some cases, sexually assaulted by the police. Then, peaceful abortion law protests happen, and we get senior citizens being thrown off stairs and women's arms being broken by the police. Cool beans! Oh boy, I bet you're thinking, I sure don't regret clicking on this fun manga review podcast. Look, my point is that one country's norm may well become aspirational for a political force in a different country, and this may well be visible in media. This is tied to my second point. You know that different parties and people with different viewpoints as well as the concept of linear time also exist in Japan, right? Even though policing in Japan now may look differently due to post-World War II demilitarization, it hadn't always been the case before, and we've already covered Nippon Kaigi's goal for militarization in our I'm From Japan episode some time ago. So why wouldn't a more effective Dirty Harry cop, who wouldn't be tied down by so many pacifist regulations, sound promising to those people? Thirdly, and this is the most crucial point, even if you ignore the two previous points, police brutality and negligence are also happening, now, in Japan. Concurrently with the Black Lives Matter protests, support ones were also held in response to a Kurdish man being injured by two officers in Tokyo. The protests also addressed the larger issue of discrimination in Japan, against foreign and domestic minority groups, like the Ainu for the latter, people of colour and the LGBT community, etc. I left a bunch of sources and further reading in the description below. Be sure to check them out because they're quite an interesting read. And this is why, perhaps, you know, portraying civilians as pissy for wanting to record a police officer is, let me check my notes, not great at any point. Not just in July. This is while refusing to be recorded and shooting at civilians is not the best thing to frame at your big badass cop moment any time. Yep. That's why this is my number one. That ended up being a failed comedy. Hard-boiled Cop and Dolphin is the encapsulation of 2020 in a nutshell. A year of bad gag manga and cops. So many cops. So, this was my shite new manga of 2020 list. I think I need a bit of a palate cleanser from all those cops that are stuck to my palate, I guess. So, I'll see you in the next month with another Top 9 podcast, this time recounting the mostly good jumpstarts of 2020. And of course, at the end of the month, a new episode of our World Trigger podcast, Duckface Diaries, where we'll be talking about the Volume 9 of the series, with, for the very first time, a very special guest. And in the meantime, remember that much like the ocean of cops, the YouTube algorithm is a dark abyss of sorrows and woes from which channels like these never resurface, and what helps us navigate it is liking, subscribing, and sharing the podcast with a friend. You can also find our podcast on anchor.fm/WednesdayDaleCheddar and youtube.com/WednesdayDaleCheddar. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Breaker, Overcast, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Podbay, Play FM, Listen Notes, Castro, Google Podcasts, anchor.fm/WednesdayDaleCheddar or youtube.com/c/WednesdayDaleCheddar is where all the links are. This is where you can all find them. Follow our sister show, Hoven's Hideaway, on Hoven's channel. You can find him on Twitter at Hoven with an H, me on Twitter at WednesdayCheddar. Follow Duckface Diaries at Duckface Diaries. And if you'd like to help me upload these podcasts on a regular basis, consider supporting me on patreon.com/WednesdayDaleCheddar. In return for your support, you can access to many different fun rewards, such as at the $1 tier, a shout-out and your name in the credits, at the $3 tier, requesting a short series to be covered on the Manga Mosaic podcast, at the $6 tier, World Trigger Duckface Avatar, those two might be reversed, at the $12 tier, access to behind-the-scenes files, and at the $25 tier, requesting a series to be covered on a long-form video essay. High-level contributors get access to manga threads for a series from the Shonen Jump Vault I'm reading for the very first time, including my first impressions on the chapters and send-out panels. Help me reach goals such as reviving World Trigger Ridge or more manga video essays. Now, patrons can vote on the subject of the video essay every time we hit a milestone. But, in addition to that, a few new pledges would make me happy, and the day after tomorrow is my birthday, so might as well think about that, eh? And lastly, a sincere thank you to Milo Jack Silitz, who composed our opening theme. You can find his work at soundcloud.com/MiloJackSilitz. So, what was your least favourite jumpstart of 2020? And are you disappointed that Time Paradox Ghostwriter wasn't on my list? Let me know in the comments, and take care!